I pray for fun, I pray for real, I pray for y'all. I pray for.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else. The afterworld. A world of never-ending happiness. You can always see the sun. Day or night. So when you call up that shrink in Beverly Hills, you know the one. Doctor, everything will be alright.
This is Joe Callis, formerly of the Human League and the Rosillos, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Accra.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Accra, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show on Friday the 13th. And if you're feeling lucky, we'll hear about how Peter Lavinia, the co-chair of the Green Party of New York State, feels about Representative Paul Tonko as he's been protesting at the Tonko Tuesday protest at Tonko's office in Albany. We'll also hear about the effects of capitalism on the medical field and all the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Makers Syndicate. And it all starts after the local news, which is next. Stay tuned.
In air waves controlled. On air, in air channel connection. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network.
Altogether Now listens for feedback from the public. Anyone who wants to leave a public comment can call 518-291-9492 and leave an audio message up to 3 minutes with any sort of opinion about something you heard on Altogether Now. You can also send emails to info@wgxc.org with opinions about what you hear here.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Greenville Drive-In 32, a destination for movies and music under the stars of the Northern Catskills since 1959. Seasonal programming information at drivein32.com or 518-966-2177.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Elizabeth Powell Leather Items of Craryville, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
You have tuned into the WGXC News Update, Go to the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about any of these stories. I'm Tom Rowe in Accra. Mid-Hudson News is reporting that the State Education Department August 12th recommended school districts cancel high-risk sporting events in areas where there are high transmission levels of COVID-19 unless all participants are fully vaccinated. The sports recommendations were included in the department's school reopening guidelines for the 2021-2022 school year. Sports considered to be higher risk are encouraged to cancel their seasons if the schools are located in counties with a high rate of new COVID cases. The majority of Hudson Valley counties are currently considered to have high transmission rates. However, in Columbia and Greene counties, the CDC puts the transmission rate at one level below or substantial. The state considers sports such as football, volleyball, and competitive cheering or dance to be at higher risk. Republican Assemblymember Colin Schmidt of New Windsor is opposed to the new guidance. Quote, I fought the Cuomo administration vigorously to ensure our students have the ability to get back to their interscholastic sports earlier this year, and we were victorious. With the new governor coming into office, I find it troubling that one of the first actions would be to once again cancel some school sports for our kids, unquote, Schmidt said. Read more in the MidHudsonNews.com. Daily Freeman is reporting that two areas of the Ashikan River will be closed during the months of August and September to allow experts to design upgrades to the dam and dikes that form the reservoir, according to a statement released by the New York City Department of Environmental Protection. The work will focus on gathering soil, bedrock, and structural information required for the engineering and design of upgrades at several structures around the reservoir. From Monday, August 23rd until Tuesday, August 31st, a portion of the Ashikan Promenade paved walkway atop the Olive Bridge Dam, West Dike, and Middle Dike will be closed. The path will reopen for the weekend, and visitors are encouraged to access the promenade from the Flying Pan parking area off Route 28A or use the Ashikan Rail Trail or Ashikan Quarry Trail. Portions of the 11.5-mile-long Ashikan Rail Trail will also close temporarily, and a small portion of the parking lot at the Woodstock Dike Trailhead will be closed to accommodate a drill rig that will collect rock and soil samples. The portion of the Ashikan Rail Trail at Glenford Dike will be closed September 13th through 24th. While Glenford Dike is closed, visitors are encouraged to use the Ashikan Station Trailhead and the Boyceville Bridge Trailhead to access sections of the trail that will remain open. Read more about the story in the Daily Freeman. And Randy Gorbman is reporting for WXXI-FM that the New York State Department of Financial Services has announced 2022 health insurance premium rates. The agency cut the rates requested by many insurers, reducing rates in the small group market for employers with 100 or fewer employees by nearly half. Insurance companies had requested rate hikes averaging 14%, and the state cut them to 7.6%, saving small businesses more than $468 million. In the individual market, rates will increase by 3.7%. Insurance companies requested an average increase of 11.2% in that market. The department said, as in prior years, the continued increase in health care costs is the main factor in setting the cost of premiums. According to the Department of Financial Services, medical claims decreased significantly in 2020 due to the postponement of elective and non-emergency services due to COVID-19. However, those claims increased significantly in 2021, as New Yorkers got caught up on medical appointments and postponed services. Drug costs account for the largest share of the medical expenses at 38.7%, followed by inpatient hospital costs at 17.3%. Read more about this story at WXXINews.org and check out any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
My fellow Americans, let's remember what this was all about. It was a violent attempt to overturn the will of the American people.
President Joe Biden signed a bill awarding the Congressional Gold Medal to U.S. Capitol police officers who defended the building during the January 6th riot. More than 100 officers were injured and 5 died in the aftermath. The president called on Americans to do their part to preserve democracy.
It requires people of goodwill and courage to stand up to the hate, the lies, the extremism that led to this vicious attack.
Meanwhile, at a Senate committee hearing Thursday, some witnesses called for domestic terrorism to be treated as an independent crime. But Maya Berry with the Arab American Institute countered current law is adequate and argued there isn't enough enforcement or political will.
We must isolate this hatred that fuels this violence. We must shame it. And hearing it or excusing it for it emanating from elected officials, including the presidential bully pulpit, did extraordinary harm to all of us.
CEO of the Anti-Defamation League, Jonathan Greenblatt, called for dramatic reform of Section 230, which he argued exempts social media companies from accountability for the content they publish.
From the algorithmic amplification of hate that drives clicks to monetizing that content because it drives revenue, none of that should be acceptable. And I don't think it is to Republicans or Democrats, liberals or conservatives.
There were also calls to strengthen federal data collection on hate crimes. Texas Governor Greg Abbott announced a second special legislative session to enact new election laws will begin Saturday. Last month, House Democrats broke quorum to block legislation they say will restrict voting rights. More than 50 still remain in Washington, D.C. Senator Joe Manchin is urging the Fed to reassess the country's stance on monetary policy and reduce stimulus to curb inflation. In a letter, the West Virginia Democrat argued inflation is reaching 30-year highs. Indiana Republican Todd Young shared similar concerns on the Senate floor.
Across the board, the cost of putting food on the table has gone up over 5% since last year. It's not just groceries. Cost of gas and energy and housing and household goods are at historic highs.
The Congressional Budget Office says the $1 trillion bipartisan infrastructure package would add $256 billion to the federal deficit over the next 10 years. And labor leader Richard Trumka is being remembered as a hero of the working people.
We have just lost a giant, and we need him so. We will remember him forever, and his memory will, I know, importune all of us to do more.
That's Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer. Trumka, who was 72, suffered a heart attack and died while camping with his family. He spent the bulk of his career in the labor movement, including more than a decade as president of the AFL-CIO. Cole Hemstreet contributed reporting. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
The Chicago Trio Whirlpool aims to blur the lines between improvising and composing. We'll hear from them on the next Deep Threes. Plus, music from Andrea Fullerton, Lowercase Noises, and the Bureau of Atomic Tourism. Deep Threes, music beyond boundaries for a digital world.
Tune in to Deep Threes after the noon news on Monday at WGXC 90.7 FM.
The National Weather Service in Albany has some good news to report, a prediction for mostly sunny skies on Sunday with a high of just 75 degrees. There's a low around 56 predicted Sunday night, and then partly sunny skies are predicted on Monday with a high of 76 and a low around 61. Then on Tuesday, there's a 40% chance of scattered shower storms and thunderstorms possible after 2 p.m. With cloudy skies, a high near 76 and a low around 64. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Sabisha Friedberg of New York, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Sweet melody, stop making me cry. Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Fahim. I'm 16, and I'm also from Hudson.
And we're here every week talking about books.
Books we love, books we sort of love, books we hate, and other bookish things.
And that's what we're going to do this week. We're usually joined by our friends Georgia, Mashuda, and Fatia, but at least for now, it's just me and Fahim.
Yeah.
We'll see if anyone else joins us today.
Yeah, hopefully.
But we have some books to talk about. I think I have a book to talk about. Do you have one?
Yeah.
What's your book?
My book is called The Wings of Fire.
Woo!
That's a novel, a book for the Dark Seeker. It's written by Clay T. Sutherland, who's a number one New York Times bestselling author, and the art illustrated by Mike Holmes. So there is a series of chapter books written by Tway T. Sutherland, also called Wings of Fire, except it's not a graphic novel. And it's basically about five dragons who are like chosen, who are born this day, in this brightest day, to be the dragoness of the prophecy, because there's an ongoing war between who should be the next Sand Queen. Like all these books are basically like perspective, and like basically these dragonos basically discovering their life. Because they were raised in caves and they were basically isolated from the rest of their family, their tribes. And like book one, two, and three basically focused on Clay, Tsunami, and I forgot what the third one, third dragon was. But basically the dragon is a prophecy. They're basically going out. They finally escape. They're going out. They're trying to live. They're trying to make sure that they can stop the war. Because if wars or fights or battle happens, like, there will be results in like deaths, and like, you know, they don't want a sudden tribe to be extinct. They want to like basically save everyone and just end the war, just choose or just like basically have a peaceful life for everyone else after that. But they obviously don't know their family, so they're trying to go and like see who their parents were, if they have any siblings, or like they're basically to know their tribes and everything. And so in the fourth book, it's talking about Starflight. He's a Nightwing, and Nightwings are basically like a tribe. They're a fearsome tribe. They're basically like the tigers of, I guess, all the dragon of the dragon tribe, because like, you know, tigers always try to like show off. Like they have the qualities, but like deep inside they really don't. That's how the Nightwings really are. They're all furious, they can fight, they have scales and everything. But like deep inside, like they're living in like the most terrible places. They don't really have a home. They're like, if they really wanted to, they can take over like all the other dragon tribes because they have that much power, but they decide to not to because they fear that certain dragon magical powers can kill them. So they have like, they're scared, but like they're not scared at the same time. They live under like one of the Sandwing princes who wants to become the next Sandwing queen. And they're basically supporting her and basically live under her. Same thing with Nightwing. He discovers that like in his thoughts, he also felt like his tribe was very superior, very like, be on top, like they're the kings. But unfortunately, he discovers like all these secret things, like all the secrets that he didn't know about his tribe. And he's alone now because he was taken away from his friends. And all throughout the book, he's trying to escape. He's trying to learn about his tribe. And he's basically, I guess, the scared one of the group. He's like, he's really not that brave. But like in this book, he needs to show bravery. He needs to like stand up for himself, do something for himself. Do something for his tribe, because like in his tribe there are dragons that really don't care about other people. They just care about themselves. They're very, very selfish people. They're very selfish dragons. And he just learns that, and over time basically he just has to get used to actually becoming a through Nightwing. Nightwing, because Nightwings are brave, he needs to become brave. And throughout the book, he discovers more about himself. And if you read this book, you will know all the secrets and what's really happening.
So, Fahim, I'm wondering, have you read other books from that series, either novels or graphic novels? Because you said that's the fourth one, right?
Yeah, I've read the first three.
Oh, you have, in the graphic novel form?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I know that's a very popular series with many people, especially our friend Amelia, who's a Bound by Books co-host. And I haven't read any of them, but they seem fun.
Yeah, you should give it a try.
How does this one compare to the earlier ones? Do you like it more or less the same?
I mean, this one had like a lot of, I guess, deaths of dragons. But like, I think in the chapter book, it describes it more, like how it should be described. In the graphic novel, it's like, yeah, this dragon died, moreover, and it just moves on. Just like this dragon just died, like you don't care about it. It just seems like that. But I guess I think that's the part that I didn't like about this book. And apart from the other books, the other graphic novels, kind of they illustrated the setting a bit more, the mood of the story a bit more.
Wait, the books do more or the graphic novel does more?
The graphic novels, yeah. I mean,
oh, okay.
This to the chapter book, yeah.
Yeah, okay, cool. That's very fun. So while you were talking about your book, Mashuda and Fatia joined us. So hello, Mashuda and Fatia. Do one of you have a book to talk about?
Yes, Fatia does.
Yeah, great. This book is really nice, and it's a little funny. Like, has some really. I just this book because it has hearts, raining hearts, and a girl catches them, and I just love it.
What's the book called, and who's it by?
It's a the book is called The Day It Rained Hearts, and who is it by? I can't remember.
Felicia.
Oh, Felicia.
Bond.
Bond. Felicia Bond.
Felicia Bond. Yeah, that's a very cute book. What would you do if hearts fell from the sky?
If I fall from the sky, I was gonna get a bucket and I was gonna catch all of the raining hearts. And then I would make them into cards and give them to everyone around the world.
Oh, that's nice. You're gonna need a big bucket to catch enough hearts for everybody. That's a good goal.
Well, it's gonna be 100 of buckets.
Mm-hmm. Would you decorate the hearts?
I was gonna piece them on a paper and write, like, I was gonna write all of them by Fatia Jenna, and I was also gonna take a picture of myself with 100 of them, and then I was gonna glue them and pope, like, give them to everyone.
Very nice. I'm glad you enjoyed that book.
Yeah, sounds great.
Mashuda, do you have a book you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, I have a poem which I wanted to talk about. So it's like a poem I made. So I don't know how it sounds, but, you know, I'm just starting to experiment. So little thy say, okay, I'm just too nervous because it was like my first time. So little thy say, unable to speak. Little thy say, forcing to speak. Little thy say, unable to speak. And little thy say, finally starting to speak. Does that make sense?
What was the word little what?
Little thy, like thy's meaning like they. So little thy speak, wanting to speak. Little thy speak, forcing to speak. Little thy, finally, like little thy, finally being like successful to speak. So it's like, do you understand what I'm trying to say? Does it make sense?
I'm not totally sure, but I like the way it sounds. It has a nice flow to it.
Okay.
What does it mean to you?
It means to me, so you know how kids, they want to, like, they learn. So like when basically infants, when they are born, they just look at faces and like the mouth moving. So like they want to learn how to speak, but you know, it's really new to them. It's like, they're just born in this world. It's like, it's very hard for them. So they want to speak, and then they move to a different, like a second transition, forcing themselves to speak, you know, like a simple word. And then finally their hard work pays off, and then they are successful at it. So it's like, that's what I thought of, like, and yeah, so Yeah, that's what I thought of.
Was there anything in particular that inspired you to write the poem?
Yeah. Me and Fathia, we were talking about like memories, and she was talking about like the rainy hearts and what she will do. So, and I'm actually starting to write poems that sometimes don't make any sense. Sometimes it's like about poems that about my favorite food or like a TV show I watched, or like it's like I'm keeping a journal. And this one is like I made today, and there's others, but they don't make sense. But like it's like, I don't know, I feel like my sister is saying my poems are getting better each day. So she said that's the poem she likes the most out of the other, because I'm talking about banana, banana, banana. Where are you, banana? It's like me and Flea are just like, you know, experimenting on it. And she doesn't like poems yet. So it's my goal to make her like poems.
My niece taught me a language that's banana language. You basically put the word banana around all the words. So I'd say banana, how, banana, are, banana, you, banana, today, banana is how are you today. It's really fun to say, but it takes a really long time to say something. So it's not like the best use of syllables.
Yeah.
But the word banana is really fun to say. So I could see writing a poem about that.
Yeah. There's a children's song about like sounding like A-E and then I-O-U. So it's like apple and banana, app, and then like eeple and banana, and saying that, pronouncing the I word, mm-hmm. and then the E word. It's like so funny.
Yeah. I think Miss Abby sings that in her movement and music program with us sometimes.
Yeah.
It's pretty fun, even though I'm not a toddler.
I wish I was a toddler.
Oh, yeah?
Sometimes it's fun.
Sometimes. Some things are a lot harder when you're a toddler.
True.
Like walking.
Yeah.
And feeding yourself, reaching the high shelves.
Yeah.
Reading.
And writing. Yeah. And trying to not eat like putting dirty hands in your mouth and
controlling your emotions, expressing yourself.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty good being a little older, but toddlers are cute. I like being around toddlers. I just don't want to be one, which I'm in luck because I will never be a toddler again unless reincarnation is a thing.
Yeah.
But thank you for sharing your poems. Or your poem. I look forward to hearing more.
Thank you for listening.
Yeah, of course. So I have a book that I read this past weekend. I read it basically in a day because it was so good. I just sat down and read it straight through. And it is called Blackout. And it is all set during a blackout in New York City. So it starts kind of early evening or afternoon when all of a sudden the power all goes out. And then it kind of goes through the night, and it tells different stories of different young people from throughout the city who are experiencing various sort of love stories, but some of them are more lovey than others. And most of them are told in a chapter, like in one block. So it starts off, you meet two characters, and those two characters actually, their story is split up in three parts. So you have three different chapters that have their story, but all of the other characters are like in one story for the most part. And the book was written by six different authors. So it's Danielle Clayton, Tiffany D. Jackson, Nick Stone, Angie Thomas, Ashley Woodfolk, and Nicola Yoon. So they're all very popular young adult authors. And it's a really good story. It like takes place in all different locations. So there's like the couple that starts out sort of decides to walk from way up in Harlem all the way down to Brooklyn. And they're of course hoping the power will come back on so they can take the train, but they don't know if that'll happen. And they're trying to get to a block party that's happening in Brooklyn. And then there's some folks that are at a senior citizens living facility. And then there's some people that are on a bus tour of New York City. They're up in the city from Mississippi, and there's some that are in the New York Public Library. And who am I forgetting? I don't know, but they're like all in different locations throughout the city, and they have different types of relationships that they're working through. Either, you know, like two of them are exes, two of them are meeting for the first time. Actually, there's a couple of people that are meeting for the first time. Some are like longtime friends. So they're all very different stories, and they're all really good. Like any of those characters, I would read a whole novel with, but it's also sort of nice seeing them in shorter formats, like little short stories. And then there's a lot of interconnection between the stories. So in one story, someone might be texting with their friend who's in a different part of the city. And then later you meet that friend and you see what that they're going through. Or even with the senior citizen facility, there's a young woman that's visiting her grandfather there. And then there's another character's grandmother lives in the same facility, and another character's, I think, great aunt or something. Somebody in their family runs the facility. So there's lots of connection across stories, but they're still like standalone, like independent stories in a way. And yeah, it's just a nice, fun summer read. It was, you know, pretty light. It was nice to read a little love story that's not too sappy. It's just the right level of sappy for me. Yeah, so highly suggested. That was Blackout by several authors: Donyell Clayton, Tiffany D. Jackson, Nick Stone, Angie Thomas, Ashley Woodfolk, and Nicola Yoon. I also love, there's like some author notes at the end, and I know Fahim has read Tiffany D. Jackson before, as have I, and her books can be like pretty intense and show some of the like really serious, like darker struggles that some teens go through. And so she mentioned in it, like sort of like an appreciation for Donyell Clayton, who pulled everybody together in believing that she could like write a story that was like a little out of her wheelhouse, because it's a, you know, a lighter love story, contemporary read. So I thought that was interesting, but highly suggested. We have it at the library, so you can borrow it. I bet it would be a really good audiobook too, although I actually read this one in print. But yeah, check it out. Have any of you ever experienced a blackout that's longer than a little power outage?
I mean, there have been a lot of power outage now these days in Hudson. Mm-hmm. So I guess, I mean, probably not a blackout, like not a complete blackout, probably, I guess, just like a short blackout.
Yeah. I feel like in Hudson, the power usually comes back pretty fast.
Yeah, it does come back pretty fast, but it goes away pretty fast as well.
Yeah, it goes away pretty instantly. But yeah, I don't think I've ever been out of power here for longer than maybe an hour or two at the most. There was a blackout when I lived in Poughkeepsie sometime in like the early 2000s that was out for most of a day, if not longer. And it's sort of interesting trying to navigate a world without power. It's a little different. Gas stoves come in really handy and you can still cook. I remember as a kid losing power for longer periods of time due to snowstorms in the town that I grew up in. There was one time where I think we lost power for almost a week. They had to cancel school some days because people weren't able to like function. And it's, you know, it's obviously those things always have their tough parts, but they're also sort of fun and interesting having to do things slightly differently. Anyways, good book. So yeah.
Yeah. I like books that like kind of connect to each other. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like it's better if like books connect to each other. It's better understanding, better explanation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like a really good book. And I think I read Blackout.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds very, very similar. A couple years ago.
Oh, this is a new one. So maybe it's a different one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, this one just came out recently.
But Blackout, I don't know, like, just there, it's probably a different book, but it just sounds like same.
Well, before we wrap up for today, I wanted to let everyone know about a couple upcoming events. So first of all, if you're listening to this on Friday, or I guess if you're listening to it on Sunday too, this weekend is the Black Arts and Cultural Festival. And there's activities happening both Saturday and Sunday down at the waterfront, as well as on Saturday, there's a parade that kicks off at 2:00 from the 7th Street Park. So be sure to check that out. We'll be there at the waterfront park. So feel free to come stop by and see us. Going to be giving away some kids' books. And then also at the waterfront park next week on Wednesday, August 18th, as part of Waterfront Wednesdays, our library and the Claverick Free Library are teaming up with Waterfront Wednesdays to bring the film Moana, Disney's Moana, for a film night at the waterfront. So the movie will kick off at dusk. I want to make sure people can see the screen. So if it's too bright, you know, you won't be able to see it, but you can bring a blanket or lawn chairs. You can bring a picnic dinner if you want. I think they usually have some food down there too, so you'd probably be able to get something, but we hope people will join us for that. And Then also coming up, but a little bit later this month, on Saturday, August 28th from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Hudson Farmers Market, we're going to have a scavenger hunt. So people can stop by our library tent and pick up a clues list, and then they can go around to meet some of the participating vendors and do their scavenger hunt. And there's going to be a grand prize to one of the people that completes the scavenger hunt. And for the first 50 kids that come, there's also going to be a free token that you can use to buy stuff at the market. So that's nice. So you can do a little shopping while you're scavenger hunting.
While you're scavenging?
Yeah, I was going to say while you're scavenging, but I don't know if you're scavenging, but you are scavenger hunting. Scavenging sounds funny.
Yeah.
Probably is the right term though. But anyways, those are just a handful of things coming up at the library that we hope you'll take part in that are out in the community. And we hope you'll stop by the library sometime soon too, so we can see you and you can check out some books. But anyways, we are just about out of time for today. So we hope everyone out there listening has a great week with lots of quality reading time. And we'll be back next week to talk about some more books. Until then, happy reading.
Bye.
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 Les effluves de Rome dans ta voix font tourner la tête, tu me fais danser du bout des doigts, comme tes cigarettes, immobile comme à ton habitude. Mais es-tu devenue muette, ou est-ce à cause des kilomètres que tu ne me réponds plus?
Et voilà.
Tu ne m'aimes plus ou quoi?
Et voilà.
Après tant d'années,
et voilà.
Une de perdue, c'est ça.
Et voilà.
La première fois où nos regards s'étaient croisés, même que ton œil disait merde à l'autre, surtout à moi. Mais pourquoi moi, alors que les autres te trouvaient bien trop laide? Peut-être que moi, je suis trop bête, mais je sais t'écouter.
Et voilà.
Tu ne m'aimes plus ou quoi?
Et voilà.
Après tant d'années,
et voilà.
Une de perdue, c'est ça.
Et voilà.
Chapeau pour la route à pied, nuet et nuetée, diva aux pieds nus restera, et
à
Césaria, et à la mort aussi, aux brigades, tu en brigades, à des millions de soldats dans ta patrie, donc garde
à vous.
Césaria, tu nous as tous quand même bien nus, hein, tout le monde te croyait disparu, mais tu es revenu. Césaria, quelle belle leçon d'humilité. Malgré toutes ces bouteilles de rhum, tous les chemins mènent à la dignité.
Et voilà.
Tu ne m'aimes plus ou quoi?
Et voilà.
Après tant d'années,
et voilà.
Une de perdue, c'est ça.
Et voilà.
Je te retrouverai, c'est sûr.
Et voilà.
Oh, soldat, 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 sold
Sola divina Cesarea, oh sola, sola divina Cesarea, oh sola, sola divina Cesarea, oh sola, oh sola, oh sola, oh sola.
You're listening to The Morning Show on WGXC 90.7 FM.
We'll be right back. Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Hello, my name is Yolissa Richardson, and today we are interviewing Dr. Xavier Coughling for The Crown, an exploration of mental health and prison injustice within the context of systemic racism. May you begin with telling us about yourself and the line of work you do.
Yeah, so thank you so much for asking me to be on. It's an honor. And I work as an ER doctor in Samaritan Hospital up here in Troy, and I've been working in emergency medicine for the last probably 7 or 8 years, originally from down in Hudson Valley area, and then kind of moved around a bunch, went to New York City for my residency training, and then I've been up here in the upstate region since then. And I've been working with the Sanctuary to develop the People's Health Sanctuary now for the last probably year and a half with our team of our council of advisors.
Now, our first question is, how would you describe the connection between capitalism and the mental health conditions?
I love the way to start the conversation with that, because I was even thinking about topics to discuss like during this interview, and I've just really been thinking a lot about mental health. And, you know, I have to say personally, just in the last like 2 weeks, I feel like the weight of climate change or this summer of 2021 of like climate destruction has really been weighing heavy on me. And, you know, a thing that I always talk about is that there's a philosopher, Eric Fromm, who wrote the book. I can't remember the name of the book, but essentially was talking about insanity and how we, in an insane society, which I would dub like any kind of capitalist Western society, is essentially an insane society, in that we prioritize objects, we prioritize materials over life. So I think, you know, the struggle for water access and water justice in Standing Rock is a perfect example, where profits are more important than people having clean water. So that's like an insane society, that the only sane person in an insane society is an insane person. And obviously the terms, you know, he wrote this in like the 30s. So the term insanity, I think, is, we can find a better term for that. Yeah, I find that capitalism kind of puts you in a constant state of depression and anxiety. And I think it gets exacerbated by certain things. So the pandemic, climate change, this, you know, new report that just came out from the UN, that's just devastating, I think. So to me, it feels like if you're not depressed in capitalism, you're just not paying attention. Like, you're just not allowing the world to affect you. And so I think capitalism really plays a huge piece in mental health and in even what we think about mental health.
Now, you being a doctor and working in the medical field, do you believe capitalism affects the medical field?
For sure. Yeah. You know, I became a doctor with a lot of the idealism I think a lot of people do in kind of caregiving field, wanting to help people, wanting to be there for people in need, and especially in emergency medicine. You know, I don't want anyone to have a heart attack, but I want to be the one to be there when somebody has a heart attack. The way capitalism, or even just like profit motive, I think specific to my field, has changed the field. It creates incentives for unnecessary care, and then it disincentivizes things that are cheap and free and are not profitable. So things like preventative care often get taken aside. And we often use like cancer as an example, that the treatment of cancer is insanely profitable. And it kind of sounds weird to say that, because, you know, we think of people who want to cure cancer as kind of agents of good. And I don't want to discount people's intentions, but that capitalism is very tied to people being sick, cancer being kind of the worst type of sickness, but that things that are preventative. So a lot of the work that, you know, a lot of the youth here are doing, like around lead in the water, contaminants from Norlite, or, you know, air pollution, all the things that we know cause cancer, there's no incentive to cure those. So I would argue that modern medicine, either consciously or subconsciously, has no incentive in actually getting people well. They are really incentivized to cure people's illness. And I think those are two different things, or two different models, that kind of make this idea of keeping people healthy and well is less of a priority than making money.
Now, in this community, a lot of citizens have to travel a long distance to get access to a pharmacy like CVS, Walgreens, or even just a doctor or urgent care. How can lack of access to these pharmacies and hospitals affect the mental health community?
Yeah, I love these questions, by the way. Thank you so much for asking them. So what I am hearing in your question is pointing to like structural determinants of health, we call, or just even structural ways of being, and, you know, what makes a community healthy. I think is super important. So when people talk about like food deserts or just this access thing, you know, here, say with the COVID pandemic, right, there's this huge thing of, oh, if you don't feel well, don't go to work. But most people have no option to do that for, you know, especially the working poor who are paycheck to paycheck. And same thing here is, oh, just go to your doctor when you feel sick. Most people, A, either don't have insurance and don't have a doctor. Their doctor is 6 months out for an appointment, or the distance of, you know, if they don't have a car, if they have to worry about childcare, if it's, you know, a long bus ride in the middle of the day, kind of disrupts your flow. So yeah, I think these all really contribute to people being unable to really kind of deal with mental health crises or just crises in general, and creates a sense of anxiety and precarity that is clear affects people's mental health.
Now, taking a transition, during my research, I found that addiction is common among the mental health community. In your work, what can be a leading cause for addiction?
You know, mental health and addiction are definitely combined. I think there's a lot of reasons that people are addicted. You know, and I'll speak, you know, somebody maybe not suffering with addiction or but having lots of family members who have had addiction. You know, there is like a growing movement of people who use drugs is kind of the term that they're using, of that some people just want to get high. Like they want the feeling, it's not an addiction. And so I can't speak too much to that, but I also just want to include that in a conversation that not all drug and alcohol use is bad, you know, is addiction. But then I think addiction also, or substance use, allows people to be numb or to not feel the anxiety, the depression. It's a very clear coping mechanism. And I think, you know, the way that people think about like having a beer after work, it's like a method of relaxing. You know, you could insert whatever blank substance. Coffee is also a drug that we use to amp ourselves up to get ready to go to work. So I think that drug or substance use and kind of capitalism are very hand in hand. And I think especially maybe like unhealthy addiction or kind of addiction in general can be a coping mechanism for people to not feel the sheer depression or the sheer anxiety or the weight of the world of what they're dealing with, and can actually often be a protective mechanism, that addiction allows people to then not become suicidal, or it's a defense mechanism against maybe more extreme versions of what their anxiety or depression could look like.
Now, what should the community provide to improve mental health conditions?
Yeah, so this is a huge question. One of the things that we're trying to do with the People's Health Sanctuary are these, what we call like the intangible aspects of health. And I think these are the things that we all know. And, you know, we like to talk about it, or not myself, having not originated this term, but that it's been talked about like this is like grandmother's medicine. So all the things that you would imagine going to a family member or an elder that made you feel healthy or well. So things like a safe place, good food, you know, a lack of precarity. So, you know, your parents are able to pay the bills, there's lights on, there's clean water. And then all the kind of social aspects of like access to nature, clean environment, you know, and then also just like a sense of purpose of, you know, a sense of belonging to a community, a sense of that your life has meaning in the community and that you are an important, worthwhile person. I think these are all the things that kind of surround mental health. And so any imbalances of them can lead to disruptions in people's kind of well-being as kind of just a broad base. I think these are the things that we often miss when we talk about, say, mental health in like a medical sense of, you know, a disruption in hormones or chemicals or just an imbalance in your genes. I think it really misses this like bigger aspect of it.
Now, you as a doctor, what are you doing to improve the treatment of the mentally ill?
Yeah, this is a question we have all the time. I mean, we're working to develop the People's Health Sanctuary as a place for people to go to have some access to some of these things, you know, a safe place or a sense of community and belonging that can alleviate some of those points. One thing that I find personally as a doctor, you know, with some credentialing and privilege in this society, is that oftentimes the best thing that I can do for people is be a resource for them, to just, you know, I can help them navigate a health system. I can answer a question that they just had that they didn't have anybody to ask. And also I can kind of help them say like, you know, this rash that you've had or this belly pain you've had for 6 months is concerning or is not concerning. And it kind of can help people deal with their anxiety or deal with their depression. But I think personally on maybe like a more systemic level, I have been trying to participate in some of these movements, like the Black Lives Matter uprising last summer, the water defenders, rights to nature and to access to nature. Some of these movements, I think, are really important piece of what we're trying to build in kind of a liberation medicine model.
Before we close up, do you have any closing thoughts or any topics you'd like to bring up that we didn't discuss today?
Yeah, just something, like I said, kind of in the beginning, just something I've been really thinking about recently is the weight of what's happening in the world, and that it can often be very isolating and very depressing and anxiety provoking, especially I would imagine for somebody who's a youth, and that I would just want to normalize that that's a normal reaction to the weight of what's happening, and that hopefully that's a conversation we'll have more as time goes on.
All right. I want to thank you so much for your time and being a resource to this community.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you for the great work.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Sounds a bit like goodbye. In a way, it is, I guess.